Dig that.
Oh, hell yeah.
She's a bad man, a I'm a black man in a white world. I'm a black man in a white world.
If I wasn't a Christian man, I'd probably be kicking in your way.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the JB's Low Tech Podcast. If you know me, then you know one thing that I really love is comedy and comics. Well, today I have an up and rising comic, and the reason why I love comics, not only do they make you laugh, but they make you think. And this young man makes you think and laugh. So, coming up next, here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
When you need someone to listen, a lawyer you know and trust.
Congratulations to all the Minnesota businesses that scraped through the last year. It sure hasn't been easy, but we've done it together. And while we certainly need to move forward, it's good to reflect on what we've been through and the many losses. Here at Bradshaw & Bryant, we held a lot of Zoom meetings, increased our phone calls, and have done our best to keep up with all the changes while continuing to provide quality work. We'd like to thank everyone that turned to us with their personal injury and criminal needs, as well as the courtrooms for bringing the community back together to serve justice. We look forward to being part of Minnesota's growth and success for many years to come. I'm Mike Bryant from Bradshaw & Bryant. I hope you're never injured in a collision, but if you are, don't sign anything till you've talked to us.
Find Bradshaw & Bryant, personal injury attorneys at minnesotapersonalinjury.com.
Seeking justice for the injured, Bradshaw & Bryant.
Play this record as frequently as possible. Then, as it becomes easier for you, play the record once a day or as needed.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB's Low Tech Podcast. Today's guest, as I said, is a rising comic. And as I said, you know, anybody that knows me knows I love comics because two things, they make you laugh and they make you think. And this young man makes you, definitely make you do both. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Adrian Washington. How are you doing, Adrian?
I'm good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Not a big deal. I'm so happy to reconnect with you. I met Adrian through the Tom Bernard podcast, The Family, and we hit it off. And Adrian's a busy man traveling the country, and also he's based out of St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is not a normal spot for a comic.
This is very true.
So I normally ask people to give a little bit about themselves, you know, their origin story, and how did you get involved in comic and comedy, and why have you chosen St. Cloud, Minnesota as your base?
I always told myself, I always thought I was kind of funny. I always told myself if the opportunity ever presented itself for me to actually like do stand up, I'm like, I gotta at least give it a shot. I can't, you know what I'm saying? And the opportunity that presented itself like 17 and a half years ago, and I got on stage and did a guest spot and never looked back. And the reason St. Cloud, that's home. I'm originally from Mississippi, but St. Cloud's been home to me for almost the last 30 years. And I wasn't able to, I had already had a kid by the time I started doing comedy, so I wasn't able to be on the road and travel. Plus, I knew what they were getting paid on the road, and I was like, there's no way I'm going to drive from Wisconsin to Fargo for $150, you know
right.
What I mean?
Yep.
And so I was like, I just got to make it work here. So it made me just keep going at it, and it was home. So I was just like, if I'm going to get support, this is the place I'm gonna get the most support. And honestly, that's the way it still is, man. Like, even with the pandemic, me not being a road comic my whole career and keeping it close to home, I was able to do comedy a lot faster than a lot of other people because I didn't have to wait on somebody to tell me I could do it.
Well, that's interesting because most comics, you know, they do the local circuit for a while and then they either go east to New York or west to Hollywood. And you've chosen to make it work here. Now, fortunately, go ahead.
No, just because it's home. I love, and I love going to those places, but there's a million people out there that's doing the same thing you're doing. And I got a wife and kids, man. I never wanted to be sleeping on somebody's couch. There's certain parts of the what people think you need to do for comedy, you know, sleep in your car. I never wanted to do all that. So I'm just like, if I can make it work at home, because I've always thought, too, if anybody ever does a story on you, they're going to start at home. If you don't have a name at home, then you don't have a name nowhere. You know what I mean?
Correct. I recently heard a podcast done by Kevin Hart, and his guest was Sebastian Maniscalco. And they were talking about just that, about, you know, Kevin did sleep on couches. And Sebastian was like, I want no part of that. I wanted no part of that. And that's the reason why he stayed in Chicago until he had the money to move to Hollywood. And then he had, as he called it, a nest egg to at least get a small apartment and not sleep on somebody's couch. Because that's got to be hard.
And you know, there's so many comics out there. There's like 4 or 5 comics living in like a one-bedroom apartment, and they just kind of lay where they can lay, and whoever gets there first gets the bed, and you know what I mean? Like,
wow.
Again, I've had a kid the whole time, man,
right.
And I didn't want to, and that's what I tell comics now. You still hear people be like, oh, man, I'm about to move out to L.A. I'm like, why? Well, I got to go. I said, well, L.A. will let you know when it's time to move to L.A.
Right.
You're not doing 3 shows a week in L.A. You have no business living there.
You're not from there. Right.
You know what I mean?
So that was just interesting for you to hear that from you. So let me go a little bit deeper in your background. You said you were from Mississippi. At what age did you leave Mississippi?
10.
And your family moved here?
We moved to Minneapolis. We lived in Minneapolis till I was 14.
Okay.
We lived over north, and over north was a little faster than what my mom wanted it to be, and you know, it was
right.
You know, the gang violence and all that, and us sleeping on the floor to avoid bullets coming through the window, and that's how we actually ended up in St. Cloud. Our house got shot up. We lived in a duplex, and my mom just said, I'm gonna get us up out of here. And we only knew about St. Cloud because my brother was dating a girl in St. Cloud, so we didn't think of no other place. My mom just asked him. I remember the conversation like it was yesterday. She said, what do you think about St. Cloud? He said, it's nice, it's quiet, you know.
Right.
And she came up here and applied for a house. And by the time we got home from St. Cloud, there was a voicemail on her answer machine that said she was approved for the house. And she literally told us, say bye to your friends at school tomorrow.
Wow.
So then I was in 7th grade. I moved to St. Cloud, which is totally different from me. But again, I never wanted my mom to feel like, the decision she made was a bad decision because I knew she was doing what she felt was best for us.
Right.
And there wasn't a lot of black people in St. Cloud at the time, like at all. This was 1989.
Okay.
So there was probably like 2 or 3 other black families in the whole city.
Right.
You know, and so there was somewhat of a struggle with racism, but I just didn't let it bother me because I was just like, most of it's ignorance. You know what I mean?
Okay.
At the same time, I was like, nobody's trying to kill me here, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, you gotta make the best of a situation. And that's what I decided to do. And we moved back to Mississippi because my grandma got sick. We moved back to Mississippi when I was like 17.
Okay.
And so I was now a junior in high school. Long story short, it was just different. I knew too much more.
Right.
By then. You know what I'm saying? I knew better by then.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up getting expelled from school like 2 weeks before school was out my junior year just because of some dumb shit.
We lost you there for a second. You were talking about Go. You were just talking about knowing that you had done something stupid and gotten expelled.
Yeah, I got expelled from school for stepping out of line to get a drink of water.
Oh,
and that's
man.
The whole thing. Yeah, I was like, I can't do this modern day slavery shit. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And I went from I didn't have to raise my hand to go to the bathroom when I was going to school in Minnesota. I didn't have to. The teacher didn't have to escort me to lunch, and you know what I'm saying? And
right.
They were still doing that kind of shit, and I was just like, I can't do this. So I had told my mom, I was like, I can come, because I was the oldest kid at home then.
Mm-hmm.
So I told my mom, I was like, I'll come, and I'll stay for 6 months.
Right.
I'll stay for 6 months. I said, but I'm going back to Minnesota, mom. I can't do this.
Well,
and it was just bad. Like, then we moved right back next door to where I grew up, so I went right back to my old neighborhood. You know what I mean?
In North Minneapolis or St. Cloud?
In Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but still Mississippi. And I ended up having to bring a gun to school, man, just because our school was on the opposite side of town, and people were like, you can't be on this side of town. And I was like, well, that's kind of dumb because my school's over here. I got to go to school.
Right.
You know, but we had a full-blown riot. It was just shit I wasn't trying to get accustomed to.
Right.
You know, I was just like, man, I've seen this life, and you either with it or you ain't. You know what I mean? And when you're there, it makes you an animal almost, because you have to have certain instincts for
mm-hmm.
survival.
Right, survival instincts.
And I was just like, man, I can't do this. And after being expelled from school, it was easy. And I knew I was gonna come back to Minnesota anyways. And so I came back here, went to the alternative school and everything, and ended up having, you know, my girlfriend at the time had my son, and I ended up graduating. I told my mom, no matter what, I said, I'm going to get you my high school diploma. That's a promise. And I ended up doing that, and, you know, the rest is history.
So when you came back to Minnesota, was it St. Cloud or Minneapolis?
Yep.
St. Cloud?
St. Cloud, yep. And I've been in St. Cloud ever since, man. I moved back June 3rd. I left Mississippi June 3rd, 1994.
So,
and I came back, and this was, by then, one of my sisters was living, my older sister was living in St. Cloud, too. So I stayed with her until I got my own place.
So there are your days on the couch.
Yeah, there's my days on the couch, right? And it's funny because even like friends now, like I'll come to the cities and they'll be like, man, you can hit the couch, man. I'm just like, I'm 44, bro. I'm past.
Right. No,
you know,
I get that.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I'll get me a hotel, man.
Yeah.
Thank goodness for these Marriott benefits. But yeah, I just don't. If I need to for something, I will. But I try to. I've worked hard enough in life where.
Right.
I don't have to do that, thank God. So
Well, it's interesting because, again, two things that we have in common. One, I got suspended in grade school for throwing a young lady her glove that was on the floor because I had the duty of sweeping the floor that day, and there was a glove on the floor, and I said, hey, whose glove? And she put her hand up, and I tossed it to her, and we had no throwing rule because of spitballs. And I got suspended for throwing her glove to her. Now, my mother bargained it down because it was my second suspension, which would have been 2 weeks. She bargained it down to 3 days because it was rather stupid. But and then the other one is when I go home to St. Louis and I got plenty of siblings, I get a hotel too. I'm just like you. I'm too old to be sleeping
man.
On some couch or something.
Yeah,
or
man. Like them days are over. You know, they're like, yeah. You know, you don't know what time you should wake up and you
right.
know, sleep. Like, I can't do it. I can't. I got friends like, man, I got extra room. And unless you got a whole guest house for me to go to, then I'm gonna get this hotel and make it easy on everybody.
So before you got into comedy. There was one other fact I wanted to let the listeners know. St. Cloud, Minnesota is, 90 minutes north of the cities, northwest?
Yep.
Of the cities.
Yep. And you hit 94 west for about hour and a half.
Right. Yep. And also, I think it was one of the stops for the Underground Railroad. So, it you know.
Yeah, I remember hearing about that, yep.
So,
and it used to be called White Cloud, man. So that's what I mean. Like moving here,
right?
As a kid, there was, and it was weird for me because everywhere I had been, everybody in my neighborhood looked like me,
right?
And I think that helped me in life because I've been able to see it from both sides. You know what I mean?
Correct.
I know what it's like to be the only, like one of the only black kids in a big ass school. And when I moved back to Mississippi, there was like, you know, four or five white kids in our school. So I understood how they felt going to school every day.
So before you got into comedy, what type of jobs did you have?
Man, I was in printing for a while. I was in printing. My first job ever, I worked at like the local car wash. When I found out my girlfriend was pregnant, I was like, I got to get a job somewhere. So I got a job at the car wash, man. And I remember it was $4.25 an hour. I left there and I went to Finger Hut. And then I left there and I went to the local bakery because there was really good money. But the hours sucked. But I was like, you know what? I was like 19 years old making like $11 an hour.
Right.
Which was really good money.
Yep.
And I did that for like a year and I ended up getting locked up for a few months so I could still go to work during, and I hadn't graduated from high school yet. I ended up getting locked up for like 3 months and I was still trying to get my high school diploma and I was still working. And I quit that job, sucked so much. I quit that one to go to a printing company for $3 an hour less.
Wow.
Yep, and I ended up doing printing for, man, probably 15 years. At a couple different companies.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, and then I was a food runner for this local family-owned business, Appert's. It's Cisco now. Cisco bought them out. But I was a runner. I did that for like 3 years. I sold insurance for a very short time. I even drove Metrobus for a while.
So you.
But my last job before I started doing comedy full-time was went back and I was a security and a mentor at my old junior high school.
Okay.
And matter of fact, I got to go on Monday up to Camp Ripley and speak to at-risk youth. So I love giving back and doing that kind of stuff, especially like kids who are from my community.
Oh, that's really cool.
So yeah, I love it, man. I do that at my old, I work with the St. Cloud Police Department and we do a group every week at my old high school. And I go there just to be one of the people who not only a fixture in the community, but I'm not a cop. I can talk to you from a civilian, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So
you know, Grubhubber.
yeah.
Running food. So as you were doing all these different jobs, were people telling you were funny or...
I've always heard I was funny, man. And it's weird because, like, even my teachers now, like, some of my teachers that come to shows or they see me in the grocery store, they tell me now, they said, you have no idea how hard it was to run a class with you in it.
Right.
They said you would just get everybody going. So that's what I tell my kids now. I'm like, I was like, because you're the ringleader.
Right.
I said, I know because that's how I was. They were like, if I can get him out of class, everybody else will settle down. You know, but I remember watching, you know, Richard Pryor when I was a kid and like my uncles reciting it to me.
Right.
And, you know, having me recite it back to them. And I never even knew it'd be such a fixture in my life. And that was the thing. I was a huge fan. A comedian. Like when I go to shows, I'll still go to a comedy show by myself and just sit there and watch comics.
Right.
I have to remind myself, like, not every date me and my wife take, it has to be a comedy show. I got to actually take her on a real date, you know?
Now, was there a member of your family that was truly funny? For me, it was and people don't realize it, but for me, it was my mother. She had a very dry sense of humor, but it would hit you as you walked away. It's like, oh, that was...
Right. And you know what's crazy? I got 9 brothers and sisters, man. And, like, my mom is hilarious. My brothers and sisters, I tell everybody that because everybody's like, your whole family's funny. I say, yeah, I'm just the one who gets on stage and does it.
Right.
But, like, man, like, as a family, we get together, there's not one dull moment.
Well,
everybody.
I also have 8 siblings, so rather large. Yeah. And, you know, I was lucky that my dad was in my, you know, in our life and whatnot. So we was our two parents and nine kids in a three-bedroom house in St. Louis. So it was rather tight growing up. So I totally understand that part of your life.
You know, and that's, and we're all close in age too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, we are too.
And like you say, when there's that many people in the house, you can't do nothing but have fun, man.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're sleeping in the bed with each other. You know, you go to school with each other. You know, we were, and my mom had five boys and five girls.
Right.
So, you know, we were all like, we were all responsible for each other.
Yep.
You know, so that kept us super tight.
Yeah, I totally get that. We, you know, we had to walk each other to school, walk each other from school until you got to a certain age where you could do it yourself.
And yeah, like you said,
you were responsible to make sure that younger ones got fed or, you know,
didn't
do something stupid.
Yeah, my mom was, you know, she worked nights, man. So, you know, the older siblings, and I'm like, I'm the middle child. There's four younger than me, that's five older than me.
Right.
So, you know, but it's, I wouldn't trade it for nothing, man. And it's that's the thing that keeps me focused and grounded too. You know, no matter where I go, I'm like, I always remember where I come from and the days of, because as a kid, I didn't feel like there wasn't nothing we did. For my mom to have 10 kids, we had a pretty good life, man. Like, we never lived in the projects. You know what I'm saying? Like,
right.
I just took my wife to Mississippi over Father's Day weekend and just showed her where I was from and the house I grew up in and let her meet some of the family down there. I'm just driving down the strip. I'm just like, our community down there is so, like, everything's boarded up. It looks like a third world country.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Same in St. Louis.
That. Yep, and I remember seeing that, and I called my mom, and I was just like, thank you. She's like, for what? Thank you for having the sense, the peace of mind to know that we needed something better.
Right.
And we deserved something better. You know what I mean? So that was me. Even as a kid, I never wanted my mom, like, even when I lived over north and I seen people getting shot and people getting beat, I never went home and told my mom none of this because I wanted her to know, like, we were in a better place, and it didn't really bother me. I don't know where in my mind that stuff didn't traumatize me, but I don't know, by the grace of God, man, like, I remember it, but it's just like it didn't alter my life, you know what I mean?
Correct. Yeah, I totally. I was lucky, because I'm older than you are. But my area in St. Louis at the time was very family oriented, and you know, every house was thriving. Even the single parent households in the neighborhood were, you know, kids were going to school, kids were graduating, they were getting jobs, they were going off to college. Things were happening still, and we were. You know, if there was a single parent household and kid was stepping out of line, and I didn't find this out until my dad's funeral afterwards at the repast lunch, guys were walking up to me saying, hey, man, your old man pulled me to the side once and told me straighten my act up or he was going to kick my ass. I was like, whoa, what?
Right. Yeah, that was the takes a village thing, you know, and that's how it was. That's why I felt so safe in my community in Mississippi as a kid, because everybody looked out for everybody, man. You know what I mean? Some mornings we'd be like, whose house are we meeting at this morning so we can all walk to school? You know what I mean? And everybody knew everybody. And, yeah, if you got out of line, like, I remember my neighbor spanked me one time, told my mom why she spanked me, and I got another spanking.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep. I was like, holy shit, I got a double whooping for nothing. That lady lied on me, mama.
Yeah, I've totally been there.
I get it, man. Yeah, it's, but it all makes you who you are. You know what I'm saying? I wouldn't change none of it, man, because it all, and I love who I am. I love where I am in life, and everything in my life has played a part of that, good, bad, or ugly. You know what I mean? Like, I tell everybody, no matter what happens, you at least learn something.
Yes.
And you know, I feel like part of failure is part of winning. If all you know is winning, then you won't ever know what it feels like to fail. Like, you fail, and that teaches you. You learn way more in failing than you do in winning. And I keep it, and you can learn something every day. I keep on learning.
You fail that one time, and it teaches you a lot. and you know,
ooh, it teaches you a lot.
And
yeah,
it teaches you also to how, you know, how to get back on your feet and keep trying and
right.
rebound and
right.
you know, life isn't perfect and you're not going to be perfect and
nope.
you know,
don't put that kind of pressure on yourself.
Right, and people who,
as I got to tell people, when I used to drive, I'm like, man, when I went the wrong way, I was like, that's only going to happen once. You
right.
know what I mean?
That's
when
true.
I made that left, yeah, when I made that left, I was like, I'll never make that left again because now I know it's the right turn. You know?
Right. No, that's totally, that's 100% true. So, but you see people who are, as they used to say, born with a silver spoon in their mouth, and the first time they hit adversity and they just totally lose it, they either can't recover or they wind up, you know, hurting themselves because
yep.
they've never felt failure. And
yep.
failure,
and that's the thing. Even
yep.
with the pandemic, that's what I told people. I'm like,
yep.
if you've been through something, you're going to be okay. If you had an adversity in life, this is just another thing you got to adjust to. And you've been used to adjusting to things. But if you haven't had adversity and you've been able to kind of call your shots and move how you want to move, because the thing about the pandemic was it didn't matter how much money you had. The world stopped.
Yes.
You can't, you know, you couldn't just say, I got money, I'm going to go here and I don't want to be a part of this. Like, no, the world was a part of it. And for a lot of people, they were losing their mind because they never had that issue.
That is true.
You know, and if you've had issues before and you've had, you know, trials and tribulations, you're just like, all right, this is another thing I just got to adjust to.
Well, they, not they, we, as I called you and we were talking before we started recording, and I mentioned that during, you asked me when I started this, I said, during the pandemic, it was like,
yeah.
for the first couple of weeks, I went to work and I just sat here. And I, you know, I continued to exercise, but I just sat here. And it's
uh-huh.
like, there's got to be something else to do. And then I started the glove repair, equipment repair business. And then I was like, you know, I can't go back to doing other people's podcasts anymore because you can't get there, or you know, they don't want you
right.
calling in all the time and this, that, and the other. And I just started researching the equipment I needed. I reached out to other people like, you know, Tom and Cassie and Bob Sansevier and whatnot, and asked, what do I need? How do I do this? You know,
right.
You know, we all have, when we don't think we do, we all have interesting people in our lives. You know, we all collect,
yeah.
we all collect people. We all collect relationships. And, you know, luckily I learned how to not only collect people, but learn their stories and find their stories interesting. And now I'm having them come on my podcast and tell me, or tell my audience their story. And
I do the same thing, man. I started my podcast during the pandemic, or a little bit before the pandemic. And it's just because then I ran into, like, instead of having guests in my studio, I had to do guests over the phone.
Yeah.
You know, and you, like I say, you just kind of adapt to it, man, and hope for the best. Hope for the best. And that's just me in life. Like, I feel like just waking up is a blessing.
True.
You know, just waking up is a blessing because, one, you know, somewhere somebody didn't get that blessing. And I was on the list to wake up. So it's just like, no matter what, I'm going to figure out how to make this day the best day possible. And I tell people, I said, even if you have a problem, like, don't let a 10-minute problem ruin your day.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's just like, it's bounce back. It's like, turn some music on or whatever you need to do. Go for a ride and just take a deep breath. It's never as bad as you think it is. And somebody always has it worse.
Right.
So those are the kind of things where it keeps me on the positive side. It's like, I feel like your mind is a very powerful thing. If you put positive thoughts in it, that's what's going to come out of it.
During the pandemic, we also saw this country at, in some cases, at its ugliest. And
yep.
you have a blended family. How did it affect you guys?
It really did.
Okay.
We know who we are and we know what we are. And we also understand there's ignorance in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's what I tell people. I said, we can't run through our house saying these people and those people. Like, we are all of those people.
Right.
You know what I mean? And for us,
it's like, for one, I don't watch the news anyways, because it's always bad news. I quit watching the news probably 20 years ago.
That's interesting that a comic doesn't watch the news, because...
No, I don't at all. I have no idea. That's when people ask me stuff, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, really. It doesn't bother me one bit. Like, my wife will watch Good Morning America in the mornings, as I kind of hear a little bit.
Right.
But I'm like, for me, I don't care about none of it, man. But, and we just, you know, even with when George Floyd happened, like, my wife is white.
Yes.
She had a daughter from a previous relationship. And my daughter's, she's biracial, but her dad was half black, so she's only 25%
mm-hmm.
Black. So she looks way more white than she does black.
Yes.
So she, even my daughter realizes, like, her life is different than her brother's or my life. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So she pays attention. She's old enough to pay attention to that. Like, wait a minute. Like, why are you looking at my dad? Like I said, this is my dad. Why are you looking like it's such a mystery? You know what I mean?
I get that.
Yeah. And so, like, we kind of joke about it, because I'm just like, there's some people that just don't get off the farm and they don't know that you can still do this kind of thing, you know? But when that happened, we brought our kids down and drove around and let them see, like, what happens when people finally have had enough. You know what I mean? I said, this is history. And I feel like, as a parent, especially a parent here in Minnesota, if I don't show you this, I'm failing you as a parent, you know? And
yes,
just talking to my sons, who are young black men, that, you know, like my oldest son, he's 25. I let him know, like, in his group of friends, he's like the only black kid. So I always let him know, like, when the cops approach you guys, even as a group, for some reason, they're going to act different with you.
Yeah.
So I let him know, don't, all you got to do is comply. I'm like, if even if it means going to jail, I'm like, that's what we have lawyers for. If you go to jail, I can live with that. We can get you out, you know what I mean? We can do process. But if you're dead, then I got to take their word for what happened, and I can't allow that to happen. And thank God my son is not a troublemaker, but, I mean, as you know, that doesn't mean something can't happen to you. And then my youngest son, he's high-functioning autistic, so his world is different, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I talked to him about survival skills and how you should move, and I want you to know, you know, if somebody tells you to come down this dark alley, I need you to know, and I have enough common sense where, like, wait a minute, this, something don't seem right about this. Like, trust your instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've been like that. I travel all over the country, and a lot of times I go by myself, and you have to tell yourself, like, you know, fans always want to hang out, and they want, hey, come over here and come over there, and it's like, nah, man, like, I don't, like, I just met you an hour ago, you know what I mean? It's like, I'm going to stay right here where I'm supposed to be, because if something goes wrong, I don't need somebody saying, well, this is what happened, or he tried this, or he tried that, and now you leave my family with all these questions, because I can't answer these questions for you.
I worked with, for I think it was 3 years, I worked with autistic youth, and they are some of the most interesting young people that I ever worked with, you know.
Right.
You know, I've coached kids, I've mentored kids, and done, you know, I've been teaching assistants. I've actually was a teacher for 1 year at a area learning center in St. Paul. But I was a classroom assistant for two different young people with autism, and they were both, you know, high functioning, and they are some of the smartest but most interesting people. You know, their view on the world is definitely interesting.
Yeah. And it taught me about it. You know what I mean? I had never dealt with it. So it put me, it gave me a different perspective on life, you know, and being a black businessman and entrepreneur, like, even when my son graduated college, I was like, my gift to you is you get to stay with us for 3 months free. You know what I mean?
Right.
I said, you get to say, but every day I let him hear me say, what are we going to do today that's going to make a difference? How am I going to capitalize off today? What am I going to do business-wise? What am I going to do health-wise? What am I going to do life-wise, you know? And he's, he's doing really good in life. He's doing better than most adults I know.
Yeah.
You know, he works for the Target Corporation. He just got a promotion, man. He's got his place right there in Plymouth, you know, and he hasn't made me a grandfather yet, you know.
yeah.
So like all those conversations I had, because I had him so young, I was like 19 when I had him.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like his dad and his big brother,
right.
You know. And he was my guy. Like he was the best man at my wedding, you know.
Okay.
And we just always had a close relationship, and I love that part. And you know, and him and his brother have a close relationship. Like I didn't have a show a few weeks ago, and he's got an outside pool at his apartment, so me and my youngest son went down there and we grilled and we swam and we spent the night and we watched the fights together, and it was just guys' night, you know. So I'm blessed to be in the position I am and to have seen the world the way I see it. I kind of walk through the world with blinders on because I've realized my gift in life is making people laugh. So I can't get caught up in everybody else's shit because it's not good for me as a person and it's not good for what I do for a living.
Correct.
You know, I was telling people on stage last night, a lot of people want you to take their problems on, and I'm not willing to do that. I don't want to take other people's problems on that that don't benefit me. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I for me to get on stage, and because a lot of times, like, my comedy mostly comes just from me being happy in life. If I'm not happy, I can't get on stage and portray that.
Right.
You know, it definitely affects my performance. And that's why, like, the stage is the one place I'm the happiest at. So my family plays a lot of part in all of that. Like, my family, my friends, like, I got a good group of people around me, and I try to get rid of people who don't mean me any well, I guess is what I'm saying. You know,
yeah.
At the age of 44, man, I don't need to be questioning if we're good friends or not.
No. Yeah, I mean, negative people, negative energy, the older you get, the better off, you know, jettisoning that stuff away from you. I'm going to take a break here, Adrian, just for a quick 1 minute spot for one of my sponsors.
That's good. I got to pump some gas.
So, yeah, I mean, the reason why I call this the JB's Low Tech Podcast is I've yet, and I know my regular listeners are sick of hearing this, but I got to tell it anyway. I've yet to figure out how to get my guests to hear my commercial spots and bumper music. So I just normally tell them, put yourself on mute, and then you'll hear me start talking again at some point. So.
Okay, and I gotta get some gas. So if you don't hear me right away, just know I'm outside pumping gas, and I'll be back in as soon as possible.
All right. Well, we're gonna take a break here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast to run a spot for one of my sponsors. Today's guest is Adrian Washington, here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast.
Well, folks, the season is finally here. What season? Baseball and softball season, of course. Are you ready? What about you players out there? Are you ready? Is your equipment ready? What about that glove you've been using? What about that uniform you've been wearing year after year? Well, I tell you what, if it needs to be repaired, bring it to JB's Glove Repair. He'll have you together in no time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair. With over 30 plus years of experience, he'll have you ready by game time. That's JAYBEES Glove Repair.
Now can't you count a word?
Take the time out to see that I'm alive, I'm alive.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the JB's Low Tech Podcast. I'm finished running my commercial spot, and Adrian's finishing pumping gas. So that's a great thing of the world of podcasts. You never know what scenario or what you're going to run into at all. And podcast allows you to stop and keep rolling and pick back up and everything else in life. I had an episode with Michelle Tafoya, the sideline reporter for Sunday Night Football on NBC. And she literally left her studio, hopped in the car, drove her son to baseball, hopped back in the car, and got back home before we finished the episode.
Wow.
So you can't stop life for podcasts. That's the way I look at it.
Right.
And I also had former head soccer coach for the University of Minnesota women's team, who recently just took a job with the University of Missouri, where she's from and where I'm from. And she said at some point, you know, Max, which is her 3-year-old son, was going to pop on. And I was like, whatever. You know,
right.
You know, life, you can't stop life for podcasts. So
no. And it's a good thing about it, you don't have to. So
right. So we kind of went through your start and your family background and whatnot. Now let's get into the entrepreneur that you are. You I believe you run a place of comedy.
Yep, I've been running my own room paid shows for over 15 years now.
That has to be interesting.
It is, man. It's been phenomenal, but it's taught me so much. You know, I do a monthly show at the Red Carpet, the Red Carpet Event Center. So it's a beautiful comedy room, holds about 160 to 180 people. We got our own bar in there, and it's nice. You know, it's a great, great ambiance. You know, we got candles on the table. I just finished my 14th season there. And I'll start the season back up in September. But I actually have Sam Comro from America's Got Talent coming next week. I usually don't do shows during the summer, but I got him coming next week. We're doing a show Friday and Saturday.
And the reason why you don't normally do in the summer is because you're traveling yourself?
I'm traveling, but the whole city travels.
Okay.
Everybody's at their cabins. Right. Everybody's at the lake. You know, it's Minnesota, man. So
oh, yeah, got to get out in the summer.
Yeah, when you get the months in the summer, you do not want to be inside of a building.
No.
And I learned that years ago, but hopefully Sam can he's got a big enough following where he can lock in a few of them for me, and we can have a good time with it. But so that's why I kind of use the summer for me to travel and go other places. Like I'm at the Miami Improv Wednesday night coming up this week.
Wow.
I'm in Vegas the first week of August. So I kind of use that for this. That's why I always tell comics, I'm like, man, that some of that money you make between September and May, put some of it away, because from May to August, it's going to suck.
Yes.
Well, it is going to suck.
Well, you know, on the family podcast, we always have the different comics in who are in from in for either the Acme Comedy or the Rick Bronson's House of Comedy.
Yeah, House of Comedy. Yep.
Yeah. And which you've done both. And
yeah.
But they always said they like to come here in the winter because they know they have a captured audience.
Yeah. So. And it's funny to tell me, me and my buddy was just talking about that. I said, and that's another thing. As a promoter and a producer and a performer, I'm just like, we got maybe 3 decent months out of the year where we know things are going to go in our favor. And it's probably from like the end of August to the beginning of November. Because once November hits, it could snow and you don't know what. Everything's a gamble when you fly somebody in. And June, May to August is just, you know, nobody wants to, unless you're at a lake or a resort or something.
Right.
People really don't give a damn about being at your comedy show. So it's kind of crazy, man.
So how have things been post-pandemic as far, I would assume people want to laugh, they want to get out, they want to
enjoy. They do. But what I found, too, is, like, comedy, we've been able to do comedy for the last year. Comedy's been the only form of entertainment for the last year. So comedy's almost got to take a back seat right now because people can do live music now.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I'm okay with that because, again, you capitalize off of the opportunities you have. When they said we could do be on the patio last June, we can do 50% on the patio. They announced that June 1st. And June 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, I did 3 sold-out shows on the patio of the club where I do my shows at.
So,
and that got to go all the way to November. I know it was November 20th because that was my birthday.
Right.
And that's when they hit pause again. Mm-hmm. And I had a show that I was supposed to happen the day after that, and I moved it up a day, and I finished out the season with a show at my birthday on November 20th.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I mean about, like, not having to wait for agencies to call me or for me to try to travel or anything like that. Like, I was able to go right to it the day after they said it.
Did you do any Zoom shows?
I did one.
How was that?
I did one for a work party. And the fun thing about it was, they treated it like a real work party. Like, they had happy hour, so people were drinking before I came on.
Okay.
They had their awards, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it was fun because then I knew I had a captive audience. I was their entertainment for their work party. And that was the only one I did. People ask me all the time, do a Zoom show, do something. I'm like, nah, I'm not really into that, man. Like, I've worked my ass off to be able to perform on stage in front of a live audience. And that's just that energy I need. You know what I mean? I can't be looking at a screen and seeing if people gave me a thumbs up or, you know, and hopefully I can hear people laugh. And, you know, there's a drag between it, too. So you just like, I'm just like, nah, I'll be all right. I got to get back to, I don't like doing things, though. I feel like I got to force it. And I felt like I would have been forcing that big time if that's what I would have done. I was able to be financially okay during that time, and so I didn't really need to do it again. Like, having a business and knowing what to do with your money, per se.
Right.
And that's one thing I'm happy that I figured out somewhere. I quit just being a comic, and I became a businessman. Mm-hmm. And comedy is just my business. So I treat it different than a lot of other people. You know what I mean? Like, this is how I feed my family. So that's why there's certain shows I just, if it's not worth me leaving my family for, I'm probably not going to do it. And I can do it here at home and have a great time and have a great show, and I know it's going to be done right, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. I myself came through the pandemic better financially than I was going into it, oddly enough. So I missed a human connection. You know, it's the only family I have here in town is my son. And we, for a while there, we weren't even able to get together. So,
right.
My family in St. Louis, my sibling over the holidays would do Zoom calls and whatnot. But,
yep. My wife's family, because my wife's from Olympia, Washington. So they did the same thing, you know, and we got a dog during the pandemic who, like, changed my life, man.
In what way?
The best way possible. Like, I've never owned a dog,
okay.
And I honestly never knew you could love an animal so much,
okay.
You know?
Yeah.
And he's such a joy in our lives, and he's just, you know, he's, me and my wife don't have no kids together, so we always said that's the kid we didn't have, you know?
And
I'm sitting outside my garage now because I can't open the garage, because if I do, all he's going to do is scream because he knows I'm home. If I don't walk in right away, he's going to lose his mind and just drive my wife crazy. So I'm just sitting here now. I'm not going to open the garage yet.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem.
Can you explain, when you talked about the energy you get from audience, can you explain to the listeners what you mean by that?
it's for me, it's like the ultimate high. Sometimes it takes me like 3 or 4 days to come down from a show that I did. You know what I mean? Like the night before a show, right. I usually don't sleep too well because I'm so excited.
Right.
And then the night after the show, all I do is sit there and play back everything that happened at the show.
Right.
And as human beings, we need human interaction. You know what I mean? And comedy is one of those things where that's why people sit right there. You know, they sit right up front. They put you as close as possible. And to know you just taking people away from their problems and taking yourself away, like, that's why I say the stage is the one place where I just feel untouchable. You know, I don't worry about anything. And just to be able to look out in the crowd and just see people spit their drinks out or say, oh, my God, or, you know what I mean? Like, cover their face or whatever the case may be. I love that part. And just, you know, the feedback afterwards. I always hang out and I mingle with people afterwards, and people are just like, thank you so much for just, you know, especially during these times. There's a lot of people who just want to laugh and just have a good time. There's a lot of people that don't want to just deal with bullshit. And that's what I'm there for. And so the energy, it's amazing. When you hit it, when you say a joke and you get that applause break, you know what I mean? That's just like, oh my gosh. And to know it's a room full of strangers, like most of these people don't know you at all, but you get a chance to make sure none of them ever forget you.
That's true. You know, as comics, you have a chance and an opportunity to make people's days. And most of you do.
Yeah. And I love it, man. I love everything that comes with it, you know, and I've met some amazing people in my life. There's been stories where, you know, this girl came to a show and she said she was planning on, you know, committing suicide that night, man. And something told her to come to the show. And she said she had a backpack full of pills that she was going to take. She knew where she was going to go because she had tried suicide before and somebody found her. She was going to go down by the river where nobody could find her. And she came to the show. And that's when I had Steve-O here in St. Cloud with me. And she came to the show and had a great time in between talking to me and him. And I had my security take the bag away from her because I didn't know, like, I seen her moving to the back of the line. And I was like, go get that bag. We don't know what's in it. And, I mean, she got the bag back, but she was like, I threw everything away because she's like, between coming to your show and talking to Steve-O, she said, I threw everything away I had. She said, I know you don't do comedy for that reason. She said, I just wanted you to know that touched me that much where I was just like, you know what, I got so much more to live for. And it was a beautiful thing, you know. Another time, I didn't know this lady's husband had died. And she told me she had cried for 3 weeks until she came to my show. And she's like, for an hour, you gave me something to laugh about for the first time in 3 weeks. And that kind of stuff is just, you almost don't even know what to do with it. And that's when I remind myself, this is what I do. I'm here to make people laugh. And whatever else comes with that, I'll take that too. You know, so that's the energy. I mean, like, it's unbelievable. Unless you do it, it's hard to explain that. And for me, it doesn't even matter how big the crowd is no more.
Right.
I could have 5 people at a table, and long as I got somebody at that table laughing with me, I'm like, hey, you know what? This is just for me and you for the next hour.
For the beginning of this podcast, as I told you, I always record my cold openings before I have the guests on, and I did say that I like comics because they make you happy and they make you think. And for me, also, I'm a closet comic. You know, I'll never go on stage, but but that's where the whole podcast thing happened for me, because I do like to entertain people in my own way, and I've gotten nothing but great responses from this. And the other thing, people have to understand, with comedy comes pain, or pain comes comedy. They interact with each other, and it doesn't surprise me that you guys were able to help those people in their pain, because somewhere in your lives, I know Steve-O has had a lot of pain in his life.
A lot of it, man. And it was awesome that he just, like, and he had a conversation with her, you know what I mean? I know she talked to him for a while, and I didn't listen to the conversation, and but she sent me this message the next day and told me all that, and I was just like, wow. And even for me, you know what I mean? Me personally, because even when the world stopped, I was okay with that. But then when I got to start back doing it and then we hit pause in November, that 3.5 weeks was harder on me than the 3 months were. Because I got to get back to it. And then I seen other people in other states still doing it. And I was just like, man, I just can't do it because of where I live. And I was so close to just, I told my wife, I was like, I got to get out of here. I got to go and be in the atmosphere, not even to perform. I said, but I can't create anything in my head. I can't make any money. I can't do nothing. I said, and I just feel stuck. And I hate feeling that way.
Right.
And so I went out to Vegas to watch some friends perform. I ended up getting on a couple shows out there. And it was just fun. And by the time I got back, they had released the pause. And I did a show 3 weeks later. And 3 weeks later, we had 150 people in the building. You know what I mean? So I got to get back to it.
I saw some photos of you and Darnell Robinson and Dave Chappelle.
Yep.
Can you talk? You already talked about Richard Pryor. Can you talk about your influences in comedy?
Yeah, you know, Richard is my GOAT, but Chappelle is definitely running as a tie with him just because I've got to meet him. I've got to hang out with him. I've got to watch him right in front of me. I got to hang with him in the green room and have a drink with him and, you know what I mean, just kind of pick his brain a little bit. And I never got to do that with Richard, obviously.
Right.
And it's just amazing. He's one of the one guys who showed me what it's like to just be free as a comic.
Right.
And if you stand on what you believe, like, no matter what they say, no matter what they do, they can't stop you from being you. You know what I mean? I've sat there and seen him sit on that stool, man, and smoke a cigarette and just be so openly honest.
Right.
And he's so, like, even when he's not doing anything, when he's just sitting there being quiet, you're still mesmerized by it because you're like, I know he's thinking of something like genius. You know what I mean? And Donnell Rawlins is a friend of mine. I had booked him in St. Cloud, and that's how we became friends. And when he's in town or when it works for me to get out to somewhere where him and Chappelle are, he invites me out there to it. I got to go to Salt Lake City, Utah before the pandemic. And it was Chappelle and Rogan. I had never seen Rogan. I had seen him in L.A., but I had never seen him on that magnitude. And again, like, you're backstage, you get to hang out and you get to talk to these people and you're green rooming, and you know what I mean? And it's just, as a comedian and as a fan of comedy, I was just kind of in awe that a kid that lives in St. Cloud, Minnesota, who is a comic himself, is sitting here with two of the best in the world. Man, actually, three of the best in the world, because Darnell is, man, like, joke for joke, I'd put him up against anybody.
Well, Darnell Rawlings, and I said Robinson, I got him mixed up with Keith Robinson and Darnell Rawlings. So I actually drove Darnell Rawlings in my car from the family podcast, Tom's podcast, to his hotel room. Because he was...
When he was here for the House of Comedy, huh?
Yes. I got to drive him. And we got to talk, and he opened up to me right then. I mean, it was like...
Yeah, and that's what's so dope about him. He doesn't care about... You don't need a limo to pick him up. He doesn't care about who... You know what I mean? Like, you can pick him up in your personal car.
Right.
And he's just a real... He doesn't come with an entourage. He's just a real dude. Like, he was the one dude I expected to show up with people and tell me, like, hey, man, I need this kind of car and I don't want to do this. And he does it all. He hangs out and he's by himself and just, we kick it, man. And he's opened up some doors for me that, like, I always tell him, I'm like, in my group of comics, I'm the OG in my group of comics.
Right.
So I don't have too many people to ask questions about how should I do this or what should I do. Like, I'm usually the person telling the other comics that. So for me to be able to reach out to Darnell and be like, hey, man, what do you think about this? And he'll give me honest advice on it. You know what I mean? And it's a great thing to have that guy in your phone.
Right.
You know, so I love that part. And I just, as a student of the game too, man, like, you never quit learning.
Yeah.
I just, I sit back and I take it all in and I try not to be an issue for anybody. Like, when he says I can come somewhere, I don't ask them guys for anything except for the experience. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I get myself where I'm supposed to be. I get my own hotel. I get my own flight. Do all that stuff because, to me, that's priceless to be able to go and be a part of that atmosphere.
for people,
and it makes me better.
Right. For people who don't know, Darnell Rollins is the voice when you hear "I'm Rich, Bitch" on the Dave Chappelle Show. And also, he was known for being the character Ashy Larry on the show.
Yep. And he's a beast on stage, man.
Yes,
and I've gotten, you know, and for me to be able to open up for him something like this, because we went to Michigan. We did when he was here for the Varsity Theater. I opened up for him when I was out in L.A., man. He got me stage time. And it's just it's amazing to be a part of. Like, when I went out to watch him in New York and Carolines, and he got me in there, man. And then, like, that's when Sway had his contest going on. It's just stuff that you got to appreciate and just know you're blessed to be a part of that. And we honestly built the friendship off of me booking him and him giving me his phone number and us just keeping in touch with each other, you know. So,
you know, I've heard other comics talk about Darnell and Dave Chappelle being so given of their time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to be honest with you. I've listened to Tom Papa and Fortune Feaster. They have a podcast, and I listen to them daily. And just, you can tell the comics who give a crap about other comics.
Yep.
And because it just comes off real. They don't make a big deal out of it, but when guests come on and they talk about, hey, we did a show together and I appreciate the time you spent with us and this, that, and the other. You can tell those. And those are comics that I really like. Kevin Hart, you know, is the same way with his Plastic Cup Boys and other
Plastic
people. Other people.
And it's such a dope vibe, man. And that's what I love, because there's a lot of personality in comics, and that's why when you find ones who are genuine, it's easy. Like, I've been to festivals, man, and I've made friends, and me and these guys, we stay in touch with each other, and it's not even just comedy. We look out for each other. When I got COVID, these guys, you know, once, and we hung out for a weekend, and, like, they're legitimate friends, and they care about you, and they admire your hustle, and, you know, there's people that tell me, like, man, like, seeing how much you got back to it made me know I had to do something and figure something out. I can't sit around and wait for people, because, like I say, I'm a student of it, man, and I learn it, and I've learned it all trial and error. And I built my company, One Mic Entertainment, up from the ground, you know what I mean? Like, I've gotten contracts that I didn't understand what the words meant, and I'm sitting there Googling every word that I didn't understand, because I'm like, holy shit, like, I don't get this, but I have nobody to figure it out for me.
You have T-shirts that you sell.
Yeah, I got T-shirts. I actually got an online store now.
Okay.
I started an online store. So now you can get flip-flops. You can get coffee mugs. You can get tote bags. I got hoodies. I got sweatshirts. I got tank tops. I got all kinds of stuff, man.
I bring it up for two reasons to help you, but also explain to me your logo.
One Mic Entertainment is, I came up with One Mic because, as a comic, that's all I ever need. I don't need nothing else. If you give me a mic, I'm a rocket. And my buddy designed the mic for me. I always loved the look of the old school mic. And I had my buddy, who's a tattoo artist, Dan Cartola, shout out to him.
Mm-hmm.
He drew it up for me, man, and I loved it. And I haven't changed one thing. I actually just had a memory on Facebook yesterday. He drew it for me 7 years ago. And funny thing about it, I just started making shirts and stuff like 3 years ago, because I always heard comics attaching a joke or something to their shirt. So I always felt that's what I had to do. And it was my wife who was just like, just put your logo on the shirt. And I was like, nah, nobody's going to care for my logo. I said, that just means something to me. It doesn't mean nothing to anybody else.
Right.
And she's just like, just try it and see. And I tell you what, man, they've been selling like crazy.
Right.
They've been selling like crazy. So that's where One Mic came in at, because you hear about all these, you know, rappers and singers and everybody, they got entourages and they got all this. I'm like, nah, One Mic is all I need. And then if you break it down as an acronym, One M-E, that's one me. And that, I feel like there's only one of me in the world. You never find another person like me. So I didn't think about that till years after I made One Mic. But that's where it initially came from. I was like, that's all I need. And the Nas had a dope song called One Mic. Yep.
So I really appreciate the time you've given me today. I've really appreciated the stories that you've told. really love the fact that you are a mentor to not only young comics, but also youth who are in trouble, and you know, young people in general. I think it may have shocked you how much I actually pay attention to you on Facebook.
Yeah, it did. But I was like, John did his homework, man. So I appreciate you reaching out. It's been a lot of fun. Anytime you need me, man, just hit me up and let me know, and we can definitely make it happen, because I love it. I love that you figured out a way to do it, and for doing somebody else's for so long.
Right.
You kind of seen firsthand of kind of how it goes, and you're making it work. So thank you again for allowing me to be a part of your audience. You guys can find me on Instagram at FunnyManAdrianW. That's FunnyManAdrianW. That's my Instagram. On Facebook, it's FunnyManAdrianWashington on Facebook. And then my website, if you forget any of this, my website is where I put all my dates. It's FunnyManAdrian.com. I got my online store on there. I got all my dates on there. I got a couple videos on there. So yeah, thank you very much. I greatly appreciate it, Jeff.
Not a problem. I have to go and check and see the next time you're around these parts myself. Just, you know, if I got to come solo, I'll come solo and hang out.
I'm in St. Paul tonight if you ain't busy. Well,
I didn't know there was a place of comedy in St. Paul.
Yeah, it's called the Camp Bar.
Camp
right
Bar?
On Robert Street. Yep.
Okay.
I did it last night. Me, Pierre Douglas, and Khadijah Cooper. So we're there again tonight. I'm headlining that show.
Okay. All right. Well, if I get a chance, I'll get there and check you out. You know,
Okay.
Really love live comedy. It as the woman told you, it takes your problems away. It may even help you laugh at your problems, and it may teach you how to overcome your problems. And I've learned all of that from being around comics. You know, because when I did the Tom Bernard podcast, I would come in on Fridays, and that was
when the comics were there,
comic day, and I always got, you know, I was, you know, and I shot myself in the foot for but the lack of times that I took photos with people. You know, I have a few,
right?
But I do have a couple with Darnell, and I did take a photo with the impersonator, the comic that does John Madden and others, Frank, what, can't think of his last name, but just those people. I actually get, and afterwards I've actually had a few comics say to me, "Are you a comic?" And I go,
right.
"No, I understand and I get them, and I just normally have a good vibe and a good reading with them." So
right,
yeah. So I had you on my list. I finally got to the point where I was like, I need to reach out to him, and hopefully he says yes. And you did that, and I really appreciate it.
No problem. Anytime, John. Man, you have a good one. Thank you guys for listening. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks again, Adrian. Again, this has been Adrian Washington here on the JB's Low Tech Podcast. And go out and go out to live comedy, treat yourself, and whatnot.
JB
is my name, and f***ing up motherfuckers is my game.
Right on. Negro, black, African American,
black.
Django.
JB.
Damn, Dolomite.
Great God in heaven, you know.
JB.
Our great Negro
sex machine.